Hi, everybody. It is Dr. Sarah Gottfried. I teach women how to balance their hormones naturally so that they can rock their mission. And I'm so excited to be on the phone today with a very dear friend, colleague, genius, writer, Dr. Sharon Melnick. So I want to talk to you about Dr. Melnick. I want to give you her amazing bio. But one of the things we're going to be talking about today, the main thing we're going to be talking about today, is Dr. Melnick's amazing book that just came out called Success Under Stress, Powerful Tools for Staying Calm, Confident, and Productive When the Pressure's On. So let me tell you a bit about Sharon. She is a business psychologist who guides accomplished women to achieve next-level success under stress, whether you're a mom entrepreneur, someone who is looking for business growth or leadership under stress. She's been informed by 10 years of research at Harvard Medical School. Ding, ding, ding. We've got a little connection and resonance there. And she's field-tested her work, her focus on success under stress, in over 6,000 participants. These are people who've gone through her trainings, who've worked with her online, and she's got these amazing practical methods that show professional women how to take control over their thoughts, reactions, and daily stresses so that they're in charge of accelerating their own career success and decelerating their own aging process. You know that I can get behind that. She is a sought-after international speaker. She appears frequently for companies such as Procter & Gamble, GE, Merck, all the biggies. And she is also involved in many of the big women's organizations. I'm not going to list them all. You can actually see them at her website. But she works with Working Mother, Women Presidents Organization, National Association of Female Executives, many, many others. And then, as I just described, she is the author of this newly released book, which I so love, called Success Under Stress. So, Dr. Sharon Melnick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my God, it's such a privilege to be on the phone with you, Dr. Sarah.
Thank you. And, you know, for those of you who are listening, we're going to get pretty informal. I mean, it's hard for me to keep calling you Dr. Melnick, so please just, why don't we just drop the doctor right now? And and we're having a conversation. You know, I gave this very formal intro, but we just love to talk. And so that's a bit about what we're going to be doing today as we talk about your book and how, you know, I want to start first with a question about the new normal. Mm-hmm. And I really feel like my tribe in particular, they feel in every cell the stresses of the new normal. And I'm hoping that you could start off by explaining what you mean by that term.
Well, sure. And I know like you like to have statistics and be empirical, so why don't we just start there? I mean, I think we all feel it in our bodies, like you're saying. But, you know, the average person now has 30 to 100 projects on their plate. We're interrupted on average 7 times an hour. If we're working in a company, 1 out of 2 of us is undergoing a major change with restructuring. We're uncertain about our future. And, of course, if you're in business for yourself, you're uncertain sometimes about where your income will be coming from. It's harder to get clients, harder to stand out from the pack. And as you've even noted, 65 million Americans are too wound up to even sleep well through the night. So these, you know, welcome to the new normal. These are the conditions of the new normal. And frankly, they're on top of the old normal. I mean, the usual stresses that particularly as women we put ourselves through of pressuring ourselves to be perfect, not thinking that we are enough or doing enough, and longstanding stresses we might face having to deal with difficult people who are stubborn or who get our goat or make us react or, you know, kind of keep us holding on to frustration. So there's a stacking effect there, right? And I travel around so much doing workshops and trainings and with companies and talking with clients, and everyone's asking me, you know, given the new normal, how can I get the best performance out of myself in my work life? How can I come home with enough energy and attention left over for my family life? And given that such a high percentage of our doctor's office visits, right, are due to stress-related symptoms, how can I prevent the buildup of stress so that it doesn't, you know, set off conditions in my body and I can really take my own health into my own hands. So, and then, of course, you know, myself, I face, you know, every stress that I wrote about in the book. So I just, you know, kept hearing from people, and I thought there have to be answers. So I set out to find them, and then I wrote about them.
Oh, my gosh. So many juicy bits there. When you said the statistic about 30 to 100 projects at a time,
uh-huh.
I actually felt some relief when you said that because
you're not alone.
You know, I'm not alone, right? It's so validating to actually hear that this is the new normal. This is what all of us are trying to cope with. We're trying to keep our neurohormonal dashboard from imploding. And I think it's so helpful to be able to understand what is it we're up against? Like, what is the enemy? And even with that lovely list of some of the things that you just described to us, like working with people who get your goat, for instance, you've actually helped me quite a bit in that regard, and I hope we'll get to that a little bit later. I feel like I want to back up for a moment and ask you to share with our community about your book and why you wrote it. So I have a pretty good sense of that already just from having all the lovely dinners that you and I have had over the past year that we've known each other. But can you back up to that place and just share with the group, you know, what the book is about, why you wrote it?
Sure. Well, you know, we only experience a stress reaction in our bodies when situations feel like they're out of our control, like we can't control them. And I feel very sensitive, just personally, to the tension that exists, that the reactions that people have when they don't feel in control. Because I know just from my own experiences in my life, like any ways that I've felt disempowered, like if I couldn't feel the confidence that I wanted to have, or if I couldn't get the results that I wanted to have, or if I felt like, you know, I was caring too much about what other people thought about me, et cetera. So I just know what that experience is like, and I've really devoted my life to being able to equip people with the tools so that you can, I mean, you've devoted your life as well to help women to be in their power, if you will, meaning to be able to feel how you want to feel in your own body and mind at any time, no matter what's going on around you. And that's what it means to be in your power. And as we know, you know, there ain't nothing more sexy than a woman in her power, right? So it's really, that's why I wrote the book, was to know the tools that I could use myself and then to equip, you know, all the readers of the book for practical things that you can do in the moment. And what I think is different about this book is that, you know, there's so much really good advice out there already, you know, like to do yoga and meditation and take a breath and, you know, walk around the block. And what I'm hearing from people is just that's really helpful, but it's sort of not sufficient for the overwhelm that we face these days. And I also find that that advice is very helpful in terms of setting a foundation for how you feel, but it doesn't necessarily give you guidance for the specific situations that you face, like what to do if your boss piles on one more thing, or if your client asks you to do one more last-minute thing, you know, right when you're out the door. What to do when somebody says something that you take personally, and there you are in a meeting, and you have to come back with a response that keeps relationships for the long term and really helps to uphold your, you know, reputation. What to do in the moment if you really want to speak up in the meeting, but you're full of nerves and you're not sure whether what you're going to say is going to be perceived as mundane or not. I mean, it's just the onslaught of daily challenges, you know, that we face. And what I hear has been very helpful is for readers to have tools, like things that you can do in those specific situations that stack up in your day to accumulate distress. So that's really what this book is about. And almost every single tool in the book can be implemented in 3 minutes or less, because I know we're all busy. So it's just this very practical toolkit.
Oh, that's so juicy. And I hope we'll also be able to talk a bit more about locus of control. That's something that I talk about a lot. And I think that is one of the most exciting messages of your book, You know, I really feel like it's part of the empowerment, giving women choices, giving women ways to step into their power by realizing that the locus of control when it comes to experiencing stress is within.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got all these techniques that take 3 minutes that actually help you step into knowing in your bones, in your cells, that the locus of control is internal. But before we go there, I want to ask about how stress affects our health.
Mm-hmm.
And as you and I talk about at least 50% of the time when we're together, we have a different way of approaching the way that we think about stress. So I'm a gynecologist. You're a psychologist. I'm just hoping that you could fill in that particular piece for our listeners. You know, what is stress doing to their lives?
Yeah, and I think the way we think about it are absolutely complementary, right?
Because, yes, definitely,
you know, Yeah, your physiology is definitely affecting how you feel emotionally and vice versa. So it's really two parts to the whole equation. So, yeah, I mean, I've learned so much, and I, you know a great book about how stress affects your health called The Hormone Cure. just to round out the equation is that, you know, what I think it's very important for your listeners to understand is that stress is affecting you in all areas of your life. And I think that what we don't really realize is that when we're experiencing stress, a lot of us are having that kind of, you know, stop the train, I want to get off feeling. And when you're there, you're on what I call the survival under stress cycle, where the challenges that come up in your day are, of course, they're evoking a physical reaction, which is then causing you to have thoughts, which is then affecting your actual performance, like what you do, you know, the actions that you take in the situation. And the more that you're having thoughts that are, I mean, the more that your physiology is kind of out of control, the more there are thoughts that are negative and very over-focused on problems, the more you're not thinking critically, the more your thoughts are scattered, the more you're not coming up with good solutions, and then, you know, that's causing you more problems and further stress. So you really want people to appreciate that there's an interlocking cycle. And what you want to do, of course, is get off the survival under stress cycle and onto the cycle of success under stress. Let me even, like, just make this concrete and give you an example. So I have a client who's a financial advisor. She's a successful woman entrepreneur. And she was telling me about how she, late in the day, 4 p.m., she got a call from someone who she's been cultivating as a referral source, a divorce lawyer, saying, hey, I have this really big, important case that I want to pull you in on. Can you come in the morning and present to my client? So there she was, like, you know, like the moment of overwhelm came in, you know, this huge, like, presentation that she's going to have to put together for the next morning. So what happens for her in that moment? So immediately, you know, sort of the adrenaline burst, right? And that causes her thoughts to be very overwhelmed. What's the first thought that she has? I better not screw this up. That's the first thought that she has, okay? So there she is, and then that thought, so it's making her, she's nervous when she thinks about presenting in front of a client. She's thinking, but I don't know everything, and how am I going to pull this all together? And then she starts thinking, well, I have my daughter's dance recital. It's 6:30. That's only 2 hours to put something together, and if I don't show up, I'm going to be inducted into the Bad Parent Hall of Fame. So she, you know, tries to kind of get going. She is thinking through the best way to do the presentation, but her thoughts are so scattered, she just kind of does the first thing that comes to her mind and just tries to get through it. She shows up with a minute to spare for her daughter's dance recital, and so she could hardly be present until the second act. So she can't really take in, like, the full pride and joy of being there with her husband. She goes to sleep that night. She sleeps restfully. She wakes up in the middle of the night. She tosses and turns. She comes in the next morning. You know, she's, her presentation is sort of fine, but she doesn't feel really, like, on it, you know. And when she gets some of the information from her assistant in the morning and some things are wrong, you know, she snaps at her assistant. So just an example, like, that might be a typical day for any of us, right? And that's so you could see, you know, the physiology leading to the thoughts, leading to she doesn't really maybe give her best performance. But she could turn that around and get onto the cycle of success under stress. simply by doing a number of things. There's a number of things that she could do along the way that would make that situation go totally differently. So, for example, as soon as she gets off the phone, she could take a deep breath, and she could do like a 1 to 3 minute breathing technique that I can teach you that will immediately, I call it the mental reset, and it will immediately clear her thoughts and get her into her best concentration and her most clear and creative thinking. So she comes into that presentation, you know, and is really able to think it through. Instead of feeling nervous about how the presentation is going to go, she could do what I call the panic reset button, right? That's an acupressure point that you could press that immediately turns off your anxiety. She could, instead of, you know, sort of thinking that she's going to screw up the situation, she could talk to herself in a way that's more encouraging and really focusing on her opportunity to bring value to this client with all the experience that she's gained. When she and if she does that, she'll get the presentation done in a better way. When she arrives to her daughter's recital, she will be more relaxed. She'll actually be able to enjoy it and feel love and pride and get, you know, actually the return on her time of being there. When she goes to fall asleep at night, even if she wakes up in the middle of the night, no worries. She has a technique that will put her back to sleep in 3 minutes. So she wakes up rested the next day. When her assistant comes in with the wrong numbers, she knows exactly how to influence her assistant and talk to her so that she gets her assistant to act in a way that doesn't make mistakes. So you could just sort of see that there were, I just gave a few examples there, that there were so many things that she could do along the way to get out ahead of that stress, to be empowered to make the situation go the way that she wanted to. And the more actions like that you take, the more you're on a positive spiral, and that's what we mean by success under stress.
Mm. Oh, my gosh. I love that a la carte menu that you gave, the mental reset, the panic reset button. I love it. I love it. I love it. And I know you're going to teach some of these menu items to us today, at least one of them. And before we do that, the last time I had dinner with you, Sharon, we had you over for dinner, I think that was maybe like a month ago. You were saying to me that there's only one rule you need to follow in order to have success under stress. Can you share with our tribe that one rule?
Yeah, and it's similar to what we've been talking about in terms of that idea that you only will activate a stress reaction in your body when you feel like the situation is not in your control. So by definition, the more you control, the less you're going to experience stress. So what you want to do in any challenging situation that you face throughout your day is just immediately kind of sort it out, you know, like, what are the aspects of this situation that I can control? We'll call that like your 50%, right, that you can control. And what are the aspects that aren't in your control? Like, that's the other 50%. And there you go. You just want to focus rigorously on your 50%, what it is that you can control. And that's the 50% rule right there. And if you want to, instead of being overwhelmed at all the, you know, thinking all the things you can control, like your thoughts, your reactions, your behavior, your communications, just remember the one mantra. Be impeccable for your 50%. Be impeccable for your 50%. It means just really focus your attention on being effective at the things that you can control before you ever worry or get upset about what the other person is doing or not doing, or before you ever allow yourself to feel like, you're becoming a control freak and trying to control the whole situation. So that's the 50% rule. And let me even, give you an example here, okay?
So okay.
I worked with a woman who was a vice president in a big healthcare organization, and she had a boss who was a screamer, okay? A boss who was a screamer. You can only imagine what that was like. So you might be asking me the question, well, what could she do about that? I mean, her boss was a screamer. She couldn't do anything to change her boss's behavior, and you just said, Sharon, that she should just focus on her own 50%. That's exactly right. So what could she do to be impeccable for her 50%? Well, before she learned the 50% rule, what she would do is that she would get totally rattled whenever she was in with her boss, and her boss would start screaming. Whenever she saw a meeting with her boss on the calendar, she would, like, live in dread, you know, and the whole day would be in anticipation of it. When the boss started lashing out at her, she would become very defensive about her decisions, and she would talk in a way that she would kind of talk on, and she wasn't very persuasive in trying to get buy-in for her proposals, et cetera. So she was, you know, not happy in this situation. Once she started following the 50% rule, here's what she was able to do. So the first thing is that she was able to use a breathing technique that she could do to keep herself poised, to keep herself cool, calm, and collected in the face of her boss so that she wouldn't get hijacked by her boss's negative emotion and then, you know, be in a negative emotional place herself. So she could use a breathing technique that would allow her to kind of protect herself, right, from her boss's emotionality, keep herself paused. Poised. So that's the first thing. The second thing that she could do is that instead of taking her boss's criticisms and lashing out personally, she was able to go into those meetings and say, you know something? My boss is really revealing to me her long-standing coping pattern, or lack thereof, shall we say. And this is really about my boss's, you know, kind of lack of ability to cope rather than about my ability. So she could maintain confidence in that situation and not get caught on her heels. What else could she do? Instead of getting long-winded and not persuasive, she went into those meetings prepared. Like, she had bullet points so she could be concise. And she was able to use influencing techniques to really get out of her own head and defensiveness and really think about what was going to be motivating and influential for her boss, really see it from her boss's point of view. So then she was just able to reframe what she was asking to get, you know, buy-in for from what she knew her boss would really want to approve. So she just started being impeccable for her 50%, and actually within a matter of weeks, she was able to get buy-in for her proposals. In fact, so much that she was actually promoted to head the merger of these two giant programs in this healthcare organization. And after she left meetings with her boss, she would go on with the rest of her day, you know, as if nothing happened. She wasn't kind of brought down the whole day. So those are just examples of, even in a situation where she'll never be able to change that boss will always be acting in the same way. As long as she's impeccable for her 50%, she can make the day go the way she wants to.
Oh, my gosh, that's so good. It's so good. I love that. You know, what would be motivating and inspirational for her boss? I think that's like the magic key. It's the way that you really are able to own that locus of control. I love
Yeah, well, and we
that.
All wish we had the remote control button, right, for other people, but kind of the next best thing is, you know, and in chapter 11 of the book, and I go into a lot of strategies really about how you gain the cooperation, particularly of difficult people, right, so how you can really frame your request in terms of what's in it for them, and it's so much easier, instead of swimming upstream and trying to get things to do, people to do things because you want them to, you know, just enter the river, just enter the stream in the direction it's flowing for them, and you'll get a yes every time. You know, I'm wondering, as long as we're talking about difficult people, you know, I'm happy to get into this even more later on in the interview, but I'm wondering if you just want to share, you want me to share now about what that technique was that she did to stay poised and cool, calm, and collected in the face of her boss's negativity.
I think that would be fantastic. Let's do it.
Yeah. So, you know, when you are frustrated or angry or impatient, you know, it's a very heated feeling in your body. We even use metaphors like, you know, I was hot under the collar or my blood was boiling, you know, to refer to that state. So what you want to not react is you want to cool down your physiology. So just use cooling breath, cooling breath. Cooling breath is a reverse breath in which you'll breathe in through your mouth and out through your nose. And as you're breathing in through your mouth, You want to do so with like a sipping kind of motion, like as if you were sipping through a straw. So if I was going to do it in a very exaggerated way, which I wouldn't do in front of my client or a boss, but just so you can hear it, it might sound something like this. And then breathing out normally through your nose. So try it along with me now, just so you can have the sense. And cooling breath is very powerful to, it kind of gives you that pause button. It'll help you hit the edit button. It'll allow you to stay poised and cool, calm, and collected and centered so that you won't react. Rather, you'll be able to think about the big picture and how it is that you really want to respond, like who it is that you really want to be in the moment. Because, you know, when we're under stress, we're only able to focus on the moment and what we feel like in the moment. So that's why we'll react. That's why we'll want to blame, you know, and we might say something that we want to regret. So when you do cooling breath, it will literally keep you cool, calm, and collected, enable you to think for the big picture. How can I, you know, how do I want this relationship to go in the long term? So let me just ask you, if you're doing the cooling breath now, are you feeling a cooling and a drying sensation over the top of your tongue?
I am, yes.
Excellent, excellent. That means you're doing it right. Terrific. So what you're doing there is actually very healthy. You're actually cleaning the toxins from your liver because that is where those kind of, you know, angry and frustration emotions might accumulate if you don't clear them out. So very, very healthy for you. But that's not even the best part of cooling breath, okay? The coolest thing about cooling breath is that not only will it calm you down, but it will calm the other person down as well. Yes, it will. This is like a magic bullet. So if you are around somebody who is tense or, you know, like the screamer boss, for example, no worries. All you do is just go right into your cooling breath, and you'll notice within, you know, 30 seconds, maybe 60 seconds or so, that whole situation will just diffuse very gracefully. You know, so you teach it to your kids, use it to change the tone of your family dinners. This definitely works. I kid you not. I've stopped fights on the New York City subways many a time.
Interesting. I really love that technique. And I love also that you're sharing techniques that I actually haven't shared with my tribe. I feel like many of the things that you're teaching people to do in Success Under Stress and even with us today are things that people haven't heard about. I mean, they're little known practices that are very effective in our modern lives, and that is so exciting. I have a question for you about something that I know many of our listeners struggle with, and that is, as women, even though we know better, we try to be all things to all people. We try to be superwomen. We try giving, giving, giving until we drop. And even though I'm always trying to encourage people and even model myself how to get the right dose of time for yourself and hit the pause button and amplify the positive, I really think it would be valuable to hear your point of view on this whole superwoman mythology that we have. And is there a better way? You know, I can't imagine that we have to just suck it up and put up with this fate.
Yeah, and I know you are a real teacher and role model on that issue. So what you're saying is that so many of us are doing the approach to our day, which is the from the moment that we open our first eye, you know, it's just push, 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 and do, do, do all day long, and give, 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 right? And then we
Right.
sort of, you know, fall exhausted into bed at night. And so there is a better way. Right? And research has actually shown that if you're going through your day like that, then you're actually not getting the best performance, if you will, out of yourself. You know, you're not your actions aren't as effective as they could be. And also, you have an opportunity to come home with up to 30% more energy left over for the evening if you do it a different way. So the optimal way of going through your day is in a pattern where you'll schedule yourself to really kind of push yourself and really give your all. And maybe it's kind of work intensely or really be giving to others intensely for, let's say, about 90 minutes. That's about optimal, although everyone needs to kind of trial and error and find their own, but for about 90 minutes or so. And then follow that sprint, if you will, with a brief period of recovery, something that will renew your energy, rejuvenate you, calm you, relax you. So it's a pattern of sprint followed by a brief recovery where in the sprint you're going to build up a lot of stress and in the recovery you clear it away, or in the sprint you're going to deplete your energy and then in the recovery you're going to replenish it. So here's what the research has shown. I'm just going to give you a hypothetical example. If there's two people who are going throughout their day, at 9 a.m. in the morning, they're both going to start off with about 90% of their energy level. And if you do the push, 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 go, go, go all day long, then at 5 p.m., you're going to be at about 30 or 40% of your energy level. And over the course of that eight-hour day, you'll have gotten about 6 hours of, like, meaningful work done. Versus if you're following a sprint recovery kind of pattern where you're really working intently or putting out effort for about 90 minutes or so, and then you take whether it's 1 minute or 3 minute or 5 minute or 10 minutes, you know, you do something that's a recovery activity, or if you can go to a 90-minute yoga class or go for a run or a walk, you know, all the better. But you do some activity that is a brief recovery activity and then back at it for 90 minutes, et cetera, and you go through your day that way, then at 5 p.m., the research shows that you'll be at about 60 to 70% of your energy level, and you'll have gotten about 6.5 hours of meaningful work done, meaning that there won't be any sacrifice on the actual output. So if you follow a sprint recovery pattern, that's how you can come home with up to 30% more energy left over for the evening. So what level of energy do you want to have when you're, you know, making decisions or finishing up that email at 5 p.m. or getting ready to go home to your family, right?
Well, I definitely want to have 30% more energy. I think that's such a beautiful description. And so can I ask you, I know you actually walk the talk, Sharon. I know from meeting you in New York and seeing how careful you are about architecting your day and fitting in exercise as a top priority, and the way that you deal with people, and you're so clean in terms of navigating conflict that's inevitable. I really know that you walk your talk. Can you just give us an example of maybe in your day today or yesterday how you use the sprint recovery? Because I just want to make this so simple for people to understand. You know, not just, okay, I need to do the sprint recovery thing, but here's what Sharon did. She did X and then she did Y. So can you unpack that for us?
Absolutely. So I try whenever I can, and again, this is an aspiration. None of us are perfect at this, and not every day is a perfect sprint recovery pattern, but I think what we're talking about here is intentionality, having intention as you go throughout your day to get results and preserve your well-being along the way. So just as an example, whenever possible, I try to really start with like a 90-minute focus time in the morning if I don't have an early morning meeting or client or speech. And so I'll do that, and then I might take a brief period of recovery. Now, again, I have your number. You know, I get it. I know all of you are thinking, oh, I can't take time. You know, I can't take time off or to relax. I mean, there's people who are depending on me, and my to-do list is like, you know, the clowns coming out of the van, like never-ending cascade. Like, I get that, and it feels guilty. So, but here's the thing that I'm saying is that there's literally things that you can do in 1 minute or 3 minutes or even 5 minutes, you know, let alone take a 10-minute walk outside. So after I might work, then I might do 2 to 3 minutes of the mental reset breath. So let me tell you a little bit about the mental reset. Is that this is a breathing technique, which is a three-part breath. So you'll breathe in through your nose, you'll hold, and you'll exhale. Now, you probably know this, Sarah, but, you know, the great yogis breathe about once a minute, right? So they'll breathe in for the count of 20, they'll hold for 20, and they'll exhale. That's why they have this very, you know, huge presence about them, because they're very grounded. So what you can do is you might just want to start with breathing in for five, holding for five, and exhaling for five. Or, you know, if you're a runner and you have great pipes, maybe you'll go up to 8 or 10. Or if you, you know, are kind of weakened in your lungs, and maybe 3, 3, 3. But you can just do that. And if you pick up a copy of Success Under Stress, you'll see that there's a hand position that you can do as well that really supports an enhanced effect of this breath. And you can just do this for 2 or 3 minutes. It's very, very relaxing. It will balance your nervous system. It will help you to have steady focus. It will help you have more energy, be less reactive, et cetera. And so this is a very simple thing that you can do. And I've put, you know, thousands of people through a demonstration of the mental reset technique. And they all report that it's like having the common focus of a 90-minute yoga class in 3 minutes or less. And you could do it while you're sitting in your car or, you know, while you're sitting at your desk, et cetera. So that's just an example of something that you can do for 3 minutes. And it's also excellent to do after you've had a difficult meeting or when you're so overwhelmed that your thoughts are crashing in your head. It's just kind of an all-purpose. So that's something that you can do, and then I might go back at it for another 90 minutes or go into a client session, and then, you know, whenever I can, I definitely will get an exercise in there. And I try to plan my days around when I exercise. Like, I'll always make sure to kind of get that time in. So I'm both energizing myself as well as relaxing. If I really don't have a lot of time between things, you know, I might even take 3 minutes, and I might just inhale some essential oils, and I'll check in with myself. If I'm feeling a little mentally foggy and tired, maybe I'll do something that's uplifting like eucalyptus or grapefruit or lime. And if I'm, you know, feeling frenetic, then I might use inhale something that's relaxing, like cinnamon or lavender or vanilla, et cetera. So I'm just giving you examples. And actually, in chapter 4 of my book, you know, it's like there's many, many examples of things that you can do in a sprint recovery pattern. And I know, Sarah, yourself, you've been teaching people that heart math. You know, there's the appreciation breath that you could do, again, in 1 to 3 minutes that will have a really big effect. So there's you know, if I could see all of you on the line, I would ask you, raise your hand if you do not have 3 minutes in your day. probably none of you would, like, you know, sheepishly admit that you do not have 3 minutes in your day. So no excuses going forward. Really set the intention of, you know, trying to go through your day. And if you're being scheduled by other people and, you know, don't have control of your schedule, that's an opportunity for you to kind of look at that, you know, and to really take more control. Do you need to be in that meeting? Do you need to be there for all of it, et cetera? I mean, there's just a lot of strategies that I talk about in the book to really assess how you're going through your day. But so the sprint recovery pattern, and then I would say the ultimate in pressing the off button is to be able to sleep well at night, right? That's the ultimate in recovery. And I know a lot of people, when they are stressed out, you know, they wake up in the middle of the night and they're thinking about their to-do list. And that is simply a function. Maybe let me just take a step back and sort of say that if you're waking up in the middle of the night with your thoughts racing about your to-do list, the reason is that you have two parts to your nervous system, just like you were saying, Sarah. There's an on button and an off button. The on button is, we'll use the technical term, shall we, the sympathetic nervous system. It's what gives you energy to meet the demands of the day. And then there's the off button, which is the parasympathetic nervous system. It's what calms you down and relaxes you. So that sprint recovery pattern is what's enabling you to have access to that, you know, energizing on button and that relaxing off button. And if you are waking up in the middle of the night, it's simply a sign to you. It's a signal that you're overactive in your on button, that you've only been using the on button, and that you are not coordinating the two in the way that they were meant to be used. Like originally when the saber-toothed tiger was running at us, you know what I mean? We were originally supposed to have a full-blown response of stress in our body, everything that we had to do to protect ourselves from it. And then that off button would come on. It would tamp us back down. It would give us the energy to rest and digest. So most of us have just become very unbalanced. We're only pressing the on button. We think it's indulgent to press the off button, although I'm hoping to really convince you in this conversation that it's the off button which is really the key to getting results and preserving your well-being in your life. Because in that on button, you're only focusing on the problem. You're only reacting to the situation. You can only solve problems in the ways that you've solved them before, because your sympathetic nervous system is not capable of seeing things in the future. It's only capable of reacting to a problem that it sees as threatening. So if you want to break your patterns, if you want to grow, if you want to be able to connect with your intuition and see the big picture and be creative rather than just like kind of react, you know, in the moment and like, you know, what work is needed, I'm just going to do it and like frenetically, you know, that's the sympathetic nervous system, then you're going to need to press the off button. So we've just gone over all these ways that you can press the off button during busy days, whether it's 1 minute or 3 minutes or, you know, it's a meditation, et cetera. And that's actually going to make you be able to solve problems better, to be smarter, you know, for your clients and in meetings and for your family. And it's also going to be able to help you get back to sleep. So the final, the ultimate recovery activity technique that I'll give you is a way to get back to sleep when you wake up in the middle of the night. And that technique is left nostril breathing. Left nostril breathing. So you literally just cover your right nostril and you breathe exclusively through your left nostril. And in about 3 minutes or so, maybe 5 minutes, you know, if you're really like overactive, then you should be, you know, back at it. You should be back to sleep. And the reason that this works is that this left nostril breathing, it just activates a nerve that immediately engages that parasympathetic nervous system. It's just like hitting the off button. So there you have it. You have no excuse now. You all have ways of being able to balance that on button and pressing the off button during your busy days.
Oh, this is so juicy. I love it. I love it. I love it, Sharon. I think this is so important because I was reading an article about sleep recently by a pretty famous writer, and she was saying that she feels like waking up in the middle of the night is the problem of every woman that she knows. You know, that whole overdrive that we get into where we're really good at the on button. In fact, we're a little too good at it. And you're absolutely right that we actually want to focus on the off button. And I haven't heard you articulate that before. Like, I love how simple you're making it. We've got some people listening to us today who are maybe not as familiar with the sympathetic nervous system and the parasympathetic, nor do they necessarily want the science of it. But then we have others who are practitioners who, you know, they love to hear the details. And I think what you're saying is when you close off the right nostril and you breathe in the middle of the night when you wake up in hyperdrive for 3 to 5 minutes, where you're breathing just through your left nostril, you're activating the vagus nerve, right? I mean, isn't that
yes,
the
you
way?
You got it. Uh-huh.
Okay, good. So I also just wanted to say that I'm gonna get Northern California on you for a moment. Can I do that?
Sure.
So I had a Vedic astrologer who said to me that as I rock my mission on the planet, I need to keep in mind that for me and also for women who are trying to rock their mission, that they already know how to press the pedal to the metal, which is the sympathetic nervous system, the on button. And if we think about a race car driver, like a very elite race car driver, maybe he's driving like some amazing Ferrari or something. We know that race car drivers don't find their mastery in how fast they drive. They find their mastery in knowing, predicting, taking the preventive break where they go and they do a pit stop and they have people change the wheels. They have people put air in the tires. They have people, you know, cleaning the windshield. And they know when to hit that off button. They know how to really be strategic and efficient about it. And so I don't know if anyone's talked to you about being like a race car driver, but I really feel like that's what I was hearing as you were describing this really beautiful way to think about the on button and the off button and how we really need to focus on the off button. But enough about that. I want to talk about relationships, since that's something that you and I talk about a lot. And I really feel for women, we know that for women, connection is so important, right? I think it's one of the ways that we're a bit different from men. You know, there's some ways in which we're a little more vulnerable to stress than men are, and we also have different strategies for how we cope with them. But I definitely see for women who have issues with stress, issues with adrenal dysregulation, that relationships are a big deal. And it's often toxic relationships that keep women from repairing fully. So I was wondering if you could talk a bit about when we're under stress and we're reacting to people in a way that maybe is not so skillful or effective. Can you help us just understand that? Like, how could we step into more success in our relationships with others?
Yeah, sure. And next time we'll do a whole discussion just on that very question.
Good.
There's so many things to go over there, but I appreciate that, you know, and it's true that women feel emotions, both positive and negative, more intensely than men and have more of a memory, particularly for negative, kind of emotionally tinged events. So we can definitely be set up to have a reactive response if we don't equip ourselves with ways. And I devoted a whole third of the book for, you know, relationship stresses. So I guess another way of putting your question is, how can you be impeccable for your 50% when you're dealing with someone else who you don't think is being impeccable for their 50%, right? And so, you know, we might think of putting it that way. And just like I was saying, is that, you know, when we're under stress, we become very focused on the moment. And all we really care about, since it's such an uncomfortable, unpleasant state, is just getting out of that state. Like, all we want is just for the situation to be over and better, and for the person to just stop what they're doing or change themselves so that we can feel more comfortable. And everything that I just said is all about focusing on the other person's 50%, right? And so we know that that's really where we have the least control, yet that's we sort of hand over our power on a silver platter in some ways, you know. So some things that you can do in that situation is, again, you want to really focus on your 50%. What can you do in the situation? And I'll even just give you an example of someone, a client I was talking to the other day, and she said, she is in a dating relationship, and her mother said to her, "So when are you getting married?" Okay, like we can all relate to this at some point in our lives, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and she kind of lost it on her mother, you know, and she reacted, you know. And so,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, right.
I've never done that.
I
do that every time I talk to my mother.
Right. So there actually is an exercise in Chapter 9. I think it's one of my favorite chapters of the book that's all about, you know, how to stay rational when people are driving you nuts. And that it really helps you break down and understand that the reason that she reacted to her mother is because what she made her mother's comment mean was, "I'm a mess and I'm not, you know, evolved enough in my life to be married." Like, she took it personally. She made it be about her. And the reason for that was because she has doubts about herself. You know, she feels insecure about where she is in her own life. She doesn't feel farther along. She's very self-critical, et cetera. So essentially, her mother's comment activated her own doubt about herself, and that made her very uncomfortable, and she just wanted to, like, make her mother wrong and get out of the situation. And again, that's why we react and have a stress reaction, because we feel that the situation is not in our control. So when she was able to use the tool in Chapter 9, and when she was able to immediately go right into her cooling breath so she could press the pause button, the edit button, you know, and really think through the situation, when she was able to access her parasympathetic nervous system, you know, so she could see the big picture and the overall context and not just her sympathetic nervous system reaction, which just focuses on the problem, you know, then she was able to have a different perspective. So she was able to really think through and come up with alternative explanations for why her mother might have said that comment. So instead of thinking, my mother is, you know, pointing out that I'm a mess, she thought, you know, maybe my mother is really concerned about what's been going on. She knows that I've been having some troubles with my boyfriend, and this is her ineffective and bumbling, albeit, you know what I mean, in bumbling way of kind of asking me, like, so, kind of, how's it going, you know? And so she was meaning to be caring, but it came out, like, all wrong, because a woman of her generation may not have had the skills. Or maybe the reason why her mother said that was because her mother is just very self-absorbed and about her, and she just wanted to be able to talk to her friends about my daughter getting married, but it really doesn't have much to do with me. And so on and so on. I mean, there are many other explanations that we were able to come up with. But just notice how as long as you have the tools to deal with stress, then you could make that situation go so differently. So she told, kind of had a different explanation for it, and then she do what we want to do under stress, which is really think about who do I want to be, how do I want the situation to go, what kind of relationship do I want to have with my mother, and then she was able to have a totally different response. So instead of the sullen, reactive one, which she had initially, the next time it came up, she was able to just, you know, maybe make the situation have more lightness and levity to it, to sort of say, like, oh, Mom, you know what I mean? I know you're still keeping your fingers crossed for me. I'm going to get there. Don't you worry. You know what I mean? Just something that was very loving, very, you know, kind of keeping it light. And then, you know, and maybe even telling her what was going on with the boyfriend, or maybe not. It's all good, but not making it kind of be a downward spiral from there. So I think that that's something that you can do in your 50%, is that you can use any of these tools to really think about the big picture, to have an alternative perspective, to really compete with the other person who you're talking to about who can get to benefit of the doubt first. You know, compete with your partner. Who can get to the benefit of the doubt explanation first? And I think that that can really help you, because it's really hard to stay angry at someone once you understand that they might have been coming from a well-intentioned place, even if they were totally ineffective, you know, about the in the way that they went about it. So it's just an example of there's actually so much that you can do, even when you're dealing with someone who's not being impeccable in their 50%. And I think that cooling breath is definitely, you know, your first kind of go-to tool. And you can use this to prevent road rage. You know, you can use it in interpersonal relationships. You can use it in when people are frustrating you in meetings instead of rolling your eyes.
Hmm. Oh, this is so amazing. So amazing, Sharon. You know, I feel like you've been so generous at sharing with us content that you can't find anywhere else. It's You've given us already so many strategies so that we can get into action with success under stress with the 30 to, what was the number, 30 to 100 projects that we have going at the same time,
yeah,
and the 7 interruptions per hour. So what's stunning to me, though, is that you've got so many more that are actually in your book. So I want to say from the bottom of my heart, I want for our folks who are listening to us to buy your book. Buy a copy for yourself, for your mom, for your girlfriends that you care the most about, for women who are struggling with creating success under stress. And Sharon, I just want to make sure that we get people sent to the right place, because I think you've got some super juicy bonuses for when they purchase the book. Can you just tell them about some of the bonuses that you have?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm so committed, you know, for you to really have an experience that is personal to you, that you can go right to the sections of the book, you know, that are most relevant for you, whether it's knowing how to eliminate 75% of those interruptions, whether it's knowing how to prioritize when everything is critical and urgent, or whether for you it's more about stopping your own perfectionism, right, from causing you a lot of stress. There's three chapters in the book about the fastest way to develop that sense of confidence and self-trust and taming your perfectionism, or whether for you, again, it's about dealing with a difficult person, getting their cooperation, not reacting when not taking the bait, in interactions with them, etc. So, in order to help to personalize it for you, what I've put together is an audio tour guide that really customizes the book to you and your specific stresses. It has as part of it kind of a quiz that can help you to know exactly what are the sources of stress for you and then what the recommended solutions are, and it sends you to certain sections of the book. I also put together for you a video that demonstrates three of the most popular calming techniques from the book. So you'll be able to get started even while the book is on the way, and you'll see me demonstrating them with the hand positions and the acupressure points, like the panic reset button and the mental reset, etc. And also, we're just going to include the first two chapters of the book as an ebook just to get you started right away, because in those first two chapters, I'm going to really go into detail about what it really means to be impeccable for your 50%, and how can you do so in the face of the bombardment and in the face of people who are not being impeccable for their 50%, because that is the only way for you to have success under stress.
That's great. Fantastic. So I want, for those of you who are listening, to go to successunderstressbook.com, buy this book, buy several copies, and then submit your receipts that you can get all of these amazing, yummy bonuses. I'm super, super excited about it. So, Sharon, any final words that you want to share with us? I mean, I always feel like I could talk to you for hours, but I also want to respect the time of our listeners and not keep going for as long as I would love to.
It's all good. Well, we'll do it again because we'll talk next time about that negative voice and how you can get rid of it.
Good. Okay. Absolutely. So for those of you who are listening, go to successunderstressbook.com, buy Dr. Sharon Melnick's book, and step into these really short practices, 3 minutes. You have 3 minutes. And have that be part of your strategy for success under stress. I love this idea of the sprint recovery and having these practices at your fingertips so that you can have a quick recovery and be more efficient, come home with 30% more energy at the end of the day. I love that.
Yeah,
so, Sharon, thank you so much. I so appreciate it.
Thank you, Sarah. It's a privilege.
Always. Okay, everybody, thanks for being with us. It's Dr. Sarah Gottfried saying goodbye. We'll see you next time.